Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View here on BBSRadio.com for Monday, November 1st, 2010. I'm your host, PK, and I'll be with you for the next hour. And as always, I'd like to thank my friend Don Nikoloff for helping me to produce this show and for his advice. And be sure to listen to Don's program immediately following mine called Evident Footprints, where he talks about many diverse things and puts his well-researched take on things. So we're both on the same page about a lot of things. And are you there, my friend?
Yes, I am, Fred. I need to politely correct you on the date. It's not November the 1st. It's
Sorry.
November the 9th right now.
It's the 9th.
On the East Coast, but it's still November the 8th on the West Coast.
So. Please forgive me, ladies and gentlemen. Don, will that affect my career?
Well, not if we stop talking about it. I think everyone yeah, but it's nice.
I'll never work in this town again.
No, it's nice to be with you again, Fred.
Thank you, sir. And you know, since we last spoke and had this program, we've had an election.
That's right.
And here I'd like to quote H.L. Mencken. He said that elections are advanced auctions in stolen goods.
And Frank Zappa said that politics is the entertainment branch of government.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, he also said one of my favorite ones is America drinks and goes home.
Yeah.
Which to me kind of says like, okay, you know, we do our thing. They go to the bar after a hard day at work. They go home. And they don't really much care or pay much attention to much else. That's why it'll always be the activists like us who are trying to move things ahead and get the message out. Because the masses, let's face it, they're busy. They're raising families. They're doing this and that. But society still needs intellectuals and people who do research and put their takes on things and keep the masses enlightened.
Yes, that's true.
And so many people, unfortunately, they form their opinions from most of what they hear on talk radio or Fox News, and they think in lockstep, and they don't go in the research beyond that. Well, that's why I'm interested in my point of view, which is the third stream point of view, which is not, you know, it's on all the talking heads programs or talk radio. There's never that third stream. As you know, there's only that left and right paradigm. Meanwhile, the third stream view or the libertarian view is it's not always at the table, and it really should be, because it's a strong force. It's intellectual. It has deep background as far as research and knowledge, especially in economics and history and philosophy, and I'm glad to carry that banner forward.
Well, I don't label myself as a libertarian nor as a Republican or Democrat, but I would say my views are in the middle where sanity may lie.
Right.
The two extremes that we have as political parties, which in their estimation are the only two that deserve to exist.
Yeah. you're basically, you'd be comfortable with the term independent, wouldn't you?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
You're like sovereign, an independent too. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in that Ron Paul Republican camp or the Libertarian camp, and I've been in that camp for 30 years now. I worked on Ed Clark's campaign in 1980, and then it was David Berglund in 84, worked on his campaign. In 88, it was Ron Paul. So I've been real consistent in going down this view. And I registered as a Republican a few years ago so that I could vote in the primary.
Yeah.
But I'm still a libertarian at heart, and it's very hard to get away from the two party system. Third parties have a big trouble trying to get on the ballot. They pass harsh ballot access laws. So when you really dig deeper about America, that you know, yes, we're free in certain ways, but in a lot of ways we're not free unless we're free to obey. And a lot of the game is stacked against not only third parties, but look how much in starting a business today, all this red tape and taxes, it's harder to start businesses for small business people. And, of course, then the Obama administration wants to increase taxes, which is the worst thing you can do especially during a recession. I mean, Hoover did it, FDR did it. And what I find so ironic, hypocritical, and just ignorant about this, Don, is that there's a lot written about this, like Murray Rothbard's America's Great Depression. We have all this knowledge. We have all this history. We have empiricism. It shows us the mistakes that were made in the 20s and the 30s, and still they go down this path.
They're doing it intentionally.
They're doing it intentionally,
but telling us the opposite.
It's like that Einstein thing about, what is it, insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's basically what they're doing, and they're just, you know, tweaking the edges. And now Bernanke wants to create another $1 trillion, or printed, or, you know, a credit expansion. You know, and at the same time, there hasn't been a corresponding creation of goods and services. You know, you have just going to be $1 trillion chasing, the goods that are there, pushing up prices. I mean, who could forget 1922 and 23 Germany with the, you know, wheelbarrows full of money to buy a loaf of bread. So, it's just amazing that they don't get it. Or should I say that they won't get it?
They do get it. They just lie about the fact that they're doing this intentionally.
Yeah.
I keep coming back to that point because that's how I see it.
And oh, yeah.
We predicted this. We predicted, watch, there'll be another $1 trillion bailout. Meanwhile, they're stealing trillions upon trillions more behind
the scenes. True. And the masses are all, they're excited about, especially the Republican side, excited about, the Tea Party type folks got in. We got this election. We got this, it's a message to Obama. Fair enough about the spending and whatnot, but no one said anything about the war. How the wars are bankrupting our country. I keep coming back to this, and I'm not a pacifist per se. I'm very pro gun ownership, very pro gun rights. But the people, or they don't want us to talk about it, is the war is it's a tremendous drag on the economy. And this budget is over $700 billion for a defense budget, and no one wants to touch that. Meanwhile, we're defending our rich allies, It's just madness. So I hope I can put a dent in things with this show and trying to enlighten people to the fact that we can still defend our country and have liberty and property and peace with a lot more cash left in our pockets.
Yes. Now, I might suggest something, and I know you have planned what you want to talk about, but
sure.
I've gotten a lot of comments from some people who listened to your first two shows, and they send out kudos, and they also would like you to address what you think is going to happen, despite the fact that there's been a shift in the control of power in the House of Representatives. I suggest to people that I think you need to be ever more vigilant than before.
Certainly.
This is done by design just to keep us busy thinking that things are going to straighten themselves out. Well, we had 8 years of George W. Bush, who was every bit as corrupt as the one that you have now. The difference might have been that he wasn't a narcissist. He was too stoned and drugged up all the time to really be conscious of anything.
Yes. Well, as I mentioned before, we have Bush 3 with a makeover on steroids.
Yeah.
I mentioned that. I do want to mention it again. My take on Obama is when I see and hear him, I don't see a mixed race president. I see and hear a smooth talking lawyer who remains clueless about economics, economic history, and political economy. It's just mind boggling. And just like Bush, Obama serves Wall Street, the big banks, the military industrial complex, and the Israeli lobby. So as far as this new Congress that's going to take effect, I kind of think they're going to nibble around the edges. I seriously doubt that they'll remain principled and cutting spending. It's funny. It's laughable. You probably have heard this or saw it. They asked several Republicans, even sort of left wingers or other radio or TV asked a lot of the candidates, and they couldn't hardly name one thing that they would cut. And when they do come up with things, it's like $1 billion here or $1 billion there. It's these minute things that are just you know, a grain of sand compared to the whole deal. So they're not really ideologues in terms of what they would do. And they all pretty much swear their, you know, allegiance to the military-industrial complex. It seems like all we're exporting, a lot of what we export are military hardware and weaponry. Well, that's hardly a way to sustain an economy. And, you know, so something has to change, and I don't really see it happening. I'll be really surprised if they chop anything seriously. I mean, I could run down a whole list right now of things, and the country wouldn't be harmed. There'd be a lot of unemployed bureaucrats, but the rank and file people would be just fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who needs all these federal agencies when you know, let's say the state of Colorado, for example, it already has a Department of Transportation, of Agriculture, of what else? You know, all these sort of things. It doesn't need all these federal agencies. I have mentioned this before. I'm very pro-secession, and secession would work for our country because I don't think – I'm sure you don't think so either. How many of you out there actually think Washington can be fixed? I mean, it's beyond that. It can't be fixed. It's too big. It doesn't respond to our needs, where the individual states could do a much better job. And if we don't like what they're doing, we should be able to kick them out through elections too. So, you know, I think that first off, nullifying more federal laws and then moving towards secession to me would be the solution, you know, because the federal welfare state continues to further bankrupt our nation, you know, and I think we should demand independence and separation from Washington, D.C. You know, after all, the states created the federal government, and wasn't the other way around. And as we know, no matter who is in office, I mean, Washington, D.C. remains way out of control and out of touch with the people, you know, yet. Ironically enough, Washington, D.C., which I, and it should be we, seek a divorce from, has actually supported secession and separation around the globe. If you consider Taiwan, South Korea, South Vietnam, Eastern Europe, and Kosovo. And, you know, secession doesn't mean war. It means that we would oppose trade barriers with other states and nations, and we would self-govern and self-finance, you know, and all the states that secede should pay for their own public works instead of Washington holding it over, you know, our heads, which was our money in the first place. So, you know, things really have to change, but I don't see Washington being repaired. They're just going to keep nibbling around the edges, and the federal government continues to grow. And, you know, our standard of living, I think, will continue to gradually drop. And, you know, people keep saying, well, this is still the best country in the world. Well, my answer to that has, in the last couple of years, formulated as, okay, well, what's the second best country to live in? So I'm not too optimistic about, you know, fixing Washington, because I don't think it can be fixed.
No, it started as a fix.
Yeah. Now all it wants is a fix, you know, as in heroin, like, you know, Bernanke, another fix of $1 trillion, give some more heroin to the economy,
mm-hmm.
You know, destroy the value of money even further. I mean, you know, today, without any constitutional authority and against the will of the people, you know, Washington continues to push war, bailouts, corporate welfare, crony capitalism, corporate socialism, political correctness, huge deficits, inflation, more taxes, massive overregulation, and a tragic, unconstitutional, interventionist, unchanging status quo foreign policy, no matter who is in office.
Do you think Washington's doing that, or do you think that they're kowtowing to the wishes of Wall Street?
That line has been blurred. Yeah, they are kowtowing, you know. And I look at the power structure as the pretty much the Masonic Rockefeller wing in league with the Rothschild wing, Global Zionism, International Jewry, and together those two power blocks, they and their minions, of course, all the ones I haven't named, or they're all connected to. They are part of this whole, you know, this whole power structure. And the way I can prove this is that the people who would scream the most if I was able to implement these policies, because in my world, with my constitution, we oppose world government and any call for a fiat global world currency backed by nothing. So I would demand that there be no government membership or political subservience to the UN, the Council on Foreign Relations, the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, NATO, NAFTA. I heard a good definition for NAFTA, which was Lou Rockwell's when it came out. NAFTA should be called SHAFTA. The Senate's hasty abdication of the founders' trade authority. Now, let me add to NAFTA, WTO, World Trade Organization, CAFTA, Export-Import Bank, European Union, and all other statist, mercantilist, tax-funded globalist schemes. This crowd would scream the most, the globalists, if we were to withdraw from all these globalist institutions, which have nothing to do with the free enterprise system or free market capitalism. These are an anathema. These are like a Frankenstein. These are not a competitive system where companies fail, then they, you know, should go bankrupt. Others, they can sell to competitors, or other people would, you know, other firms would come into play. And that should even be, foreign or domestic. So this is the perversion of capitalism. This is not what for example, the Austrian economists, the great Mises or Rothbard, Friedrich Hayek, the great French classical liberal economist Frédéric Bastiat 200 years ago. This is contrary to all the goodness of those things. It'd be like we're musicians. It'd be like constantly playing way out of tune and way out of time and making that the norm, if I could use that as a comparison.
Yeah, and playing in the same key all the time.
Right, right. And they try to, throw this up to us, is that this is the American way. The American way was a free enterprise, and you spend your own money, your own capital. You can borrow from friends or creditors or banks, but you take the risks and you don't get bailed out. And, just like our children or other people, you learn from your mistakes. Well, that's what businesses should do, too. But when they get bailed out or somebody's holding their hand at the expense of regular taxpayers, I mean, look at states like Ohio and Indiana, with all that Rust Belt unemployment. Why should those people who are just trying to make a living and, take care of their families bail out these fat cats? If those bailouts didn't take place, going on 2 years ago, there would have been a quick, sharp shift in things. It would have been painful, but then we'd have been past it long ago, and we'd have, reformed things. But they're not allowing that to happen. And that's the problem. And that's where Bernanke plays a big role, and Greenspan. I don't see how these two can even, face the public. And now Bush on his book tour. This is madness.
Yeah. Well, who do you think wrote his book?
Well,
you're talking.
I'm a decider. I have certain people help me.
You're talking about the guy that read My Pet Goat upside down. And I don't remember.
Yeah, it's who knows. But I'm sure he had some help. But the thing that upset him the most was what Kanye West called him a racist because of New Orleans. Well, I have one thing to ask Mr. Bush, and that is, Mr. Bush, former President Bush, would Jesus create a pack of lies and then bomb the hell out of and invade a country that never threatened his own? That's what I'd like to know, Mr. Bush, you who profess to be a Christian, you who destroyed the small Christian community of Iraq, the small Jewish community of Iraq, and caused millions of refugees, and your biggest problem was what Kanye West called you a racist. So, that's just mind-boggling. Where these people get the cojones to do this sort of thing, I will never know. It's beyond my comprehension how they can get away with that and just, have the audacity to do it.
They've been doing it for thousands of years, and no one's ever stood up to them.
Yeah.
Well, they've been thrown out of countries, but, they always came back with vengeance.
Yeah. And, you know, and they're rewarded with it. Now, you know, the Illuminati or the globalist New World Order crowd behind them, you know, the presidents and these people, they'll retire as millionaires. They'll write their books and memoirs and have all, you know, all their book rights and this and this and this and that in their place in history. But they're just puppets, basically. Willing puppets. Obama's a very willing puppet. I mean, he might as well just be a mixed race, blue blood, skull and bones member. How do you like that description?
Yeah. He's outdone himself. He goes beyond being a puppet, though. He's sort of, you remember the movie where the puppet becomes alive and it becomes a murderer?
Like in Magic?
Chucky, I think he's called.
Oh, Chucky, yes. Chucky. Yeah, that little, where's Chucky when we need him? Yeah. Or as better yet, as Nixon said about, as Buddy Rich said about Nixon, where's Oswald when we need him? Of course, we all know, well, we should know that Oswald was involved as the patsy, wouldn't you think?
Sure.
You need a patsy.
Sure.
You know, that's how this thing goes. And meanwhile, they're more worried about putting a mosque not too far from the 9/11, you know, area, which is kind of comical to me because you mean to tell me that the those Muslim folks could get the funding to put a mosque together where they haven't put anything in place there in about 9 years, you know, since the days of 9/11, they haven't built anything. The exceptional Americans haven't put anything there in 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
Does beg the question. I would like to see more optimistic about the future. We'll see in January, but I predict that it'll be sort of same old, same old. They'll nibble around the edges. They'll say they're against spending, and then they'll just carry on with the same, pretty much the same, you know, methodology. They disagree about how much they basically agree on everything except how much to spend. The two parties, the one government party with two heads. And so the Republican head has got itself elected now for at least in the House. So, you know, we'll see. Actually, a Republican Congress with a Democrat president is not a bad thing in terms of gridlock, because gridlock is not necessarily a bad thing, because then, it, you know, things don't get done. There's less legislation. There's less this and that. So, you know, as the way things are right now, I don't really mind gridlock in their case. In the case of government.
Yeah. Well, you know, the expansion is twofold. It's automatic votes and all the tangential votes that come about because, you know, little Billy Bob works for the government. We have to vote for this guy or that guy so he can keep his job.
Right.
His high-paying job. You know, otherwise he's got to go shrimping. Or back to selling night crawlers.
And speaking of high-paying jobs, it seems like a lot of these government jobs now, or these federal jobs, they're paying more than the private sector.
Yeah, yeah.
Benefits and what?
Where's money coming from?
You know, and I don't think it was that way 10, 20 years ago as much. And there's far too many employees on the government payroll, which means the private sector has to carry them too. You know, and meanwhile, you got Social Security being run into the ground, which is a bankrupt system anyway, which is, you know, pushed by FDR to buy votes. Well, young people of today don't think they're going to get anything out of that.
No, they
you know,
don't.
And both parties have, especially Democrats, have raided the Social Security supposed lockbox. They've raided it for other things. So, you know, people, those who think that Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security is such a good thing, well, why are they all in the red? You know, I don't want to put – I definitely do not want to throw people on the streets and take anything away from them. But in terms of just Social Security right now, there's a couple prong ways of going about it. All those people who have paid into it and who don't need it and who could easily walk away from it, I would encourage to do. Second of all, I would try to give a lump sum to those people who are already eligible for it, mostly our seniors who are already eligible for it, or sell off a lot of government property and give them a lump sum. or especially bringing the defense budget within line, bringing our troops home from overseas and these all these bases in first world countries like Western Europe, South Korea, and Japan, and use that money towards buying out the people who are on the system now. Let's take care of these people. I'm not going to throw them on the street. Let's give them a lump sum or set up a system with this revenue where they can continue to get their payments, but we cut everybody else free. And we're unlike Bush's system of investing our money in the stock market. We don't want government taking our money and investing in the stock market. That's left to Americans as individuals with control over their money to do what they want with it, to invest it in the, you know, the systems of their choice, or save it, or, you know, stick it in a bank or whatever they choose to do with it. But the way the system is now, you know, the world's largest chain letter, I don't see it, you know, I don't see it working without many difficulties. I mean, look at those, how foolish the French are, bitching and protesting over just raising their retirement age 2 years. I mean, that's ridiculous. I think Europe's going to have a reckoning day, too, because those welfare states are just going to collapse. There just comes a point where it's just, you know, it can't be afforded. It's just, you know, how are they going to raise taxes? How much money are they going to print? How huge a deficits are they going to run? So who knows? What do you think, Don?
Well, you're right. I agree with you. It's one thing after another, and it seems to be like a lot of this stuff is actually provoked just as a litmus test to see what's going to happen, because they have bigger plans than a few protests, you know, going on.
Yeah, and Americans are very docile, so they don't, you know, they'll take to the streets about a few things, but maybe they're overwhelmed or can't comprehend what's going on right now. I think a lot of these jobs aren't coming back. I would like to see, through massive tax cuts and in regulations, let the market flourish and invite foreign investment and invite investors. Now people are uptight with their money. And here's another irony. As you know, we're a nation that has very good universities and business schools. And they actually teach accounting, cost accounting, finance. And you mean to tell me that all these, you know, 4.0 graduates of all these American universities who are in business and government, they can't do a better job managing money than they are? You know, I was thinking about that lately. Mm-hmm. What are they doing? You know, what are they doing with these degrees in finance and accounting? Are they just throwing them to the wind and just saying, oh, well, deficits, we can just do this? You know, however, if we as individuals run our own checkbooks that way, if we spent that kind of money over what we took in, we'd be arrested for fraud. We'd be in jail. But, governments get away with it.
Their laws don't apply to them because nothing but organized crime.
They exempt themselves. It's like the EPA exempts itself from, pollution and things that it has done. So, so that's why this third stream view that I have will always speak truth to power, and I can't be bought, and I'm not part of any, I'm not beholden to any political party or special interest group. So I will always speak truth to power. You know, I'm sure that if I was a guest on any of these type shows on these TV shows as a third party the third stream view, that, I'd raise a lot of eyebrows and people would probably like what I have to say, because I'm not going to sing the same song. I just, you know, they're just gatekeepers for the left and the right. That's what I see. That's what I hear.
Well, that's the only message they want out there, which is why you don't hear any independent thought on mainstream media.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my dream is, my goal is, I personally would love to have a cable show where I have my own, R&B band, and I would come down from the bandstand and I would host the show, and I would have many types of guests who aren't in the mainstream, and I would, and even if they're ones I don't like personally or disagree with, I wouldn't ridicule them. I'd let them speak. I wouldn't step all over them. That's the part I would enjoy. I would tease them, and I would poke at them, but in a humorous way. But I would like to let them speak. I mean, I would like to have on my show, I'd like to have Reverend Wright, who, by the way, is very, very accurate about foreign policy, U.S. foreign policy, and also AIDS and the origin of AIDS. And by the way, you know, they put down Reverend Wright. Well, you know, he's got, I believe it's 6 or 7 years of U.S. military service. I think it was 4 years in the Navy and 2 years in the Marine Corps. Now, gee, I thought if anybody could speak their mind, it's a U.S. veteran. So he's a person I would have on. I'd like to have Louis Farrakhan on. I would like to have I'd like to have Alex Jones. I'd like to have David Duke on. I'd like to have many controversial people. I'd like to have Norman Finkelstein on. Many people who I would like to hear on, you know, mainstream who don't get on mainstream. So that's what I would have. I would have a show like that. And, of course, the powers that be wouldn't like it, but I would like it. And I've got the venues and I've got, you know, I've got the band. So if any, there's any well-heeled, well-oiled listeners out there who would enjoy something like that, please contact our station because I'm there.
Would you like me to play a track from Soul Function?
Which track is it?
Oh, I don't know. I've got a bunch of them. I've got 32 of them.
Sure. Pick out which. Let's see. What do you think?
Well, you want to hear an instrumental or? Yeah, why not an instrumental? Why not the theme from Police Squad? I think
that's... You just play a little of it?
We'll dedicate it to... Well, it's like 2 minutes and 16 seconds long.
Oh, is that what it is? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is my band, ladies and gentlemen. And this particular night, we used six horns in four rhythm. We had, instead of three horns, which is usually trumpet, sax, and trombone, we had two trumpets, a trombone, and three saxophones. So it gave it quite a full sound. So take it away, Don, please.
Okay, and this is we'll dedicate this to the real law enforcement out there. Theme from Police Squad. And I got to get the volume set and everything here, so give me a second. All right, here we go. Yeah. Here we go. It's ready.
What a band!
Fred, or I should say PK, on the drums.
Freddie Hubbard on trumpet.
Freddie Hubbard on the trumpet, right.
Yeah, thank you for that. And I hope you like that, ladies and gentlemen. It's a honor to play American music, especially horn-driven American rhythm and blues music. And I've said this before, wherever you go in the world, you hear American music. And unlike our military and our political intervention, it's welcome. it's welcome throughout the world. And I've even been to some Vietnamese karaoke shows, and it's it's interesting to hear them singing, you know, American music with their accents and everything. So it's the influence that it has is quite interesting, and how it all came together. In fact, even reggae, which is music that I like a lot, Jamaican musicians listened to American rhythm and blues music, which they sort of mixed with their own Jamaican folk music rhythms, and which led to the creation of ska and then reggae. So American music influences, you know, other countries too. And then you have, of course, you had Dizzy Gillespie and Stan Getz bringing the music of Cuba and Brazil to the U.S., which, you know, they brought Afro-Cuban mambo music, and then Getz brought, you know, bossa nova and samba, and then that music kind of blended into with jazz. You've got, like, you know, Brazilian jazz and, you know, Afro-Cuban music. So it's been a great melting pot for a lot of music to come together and the musicians from other countries who congregated here.
Yeah, that's where musicians are different from military and governments around the world. Musicians can get together and jam and even share their ideas with one another in a very peaceful and a very loving and a very festive manner.
True.
They don't need to murder each other to do it.
No, unless you're a rap musician. If you have a rap musician thug background, then you can go, you know, you can go pop a cap in somebody's ass, you know, one of your rival rival bands, or, you know, that whole mentality that I'll never get or understand. But yeah, I'm not big on rap and hip hop. Maybe I'm showing my age, but I don't see much musical value in it. I know they're singing about conditions in the hood, but instead of doing something more uplifting, they push all this crap, which really appeals to a lot of middle-class white kids who are buying this stuff.
Well, yeah, I think they've been indoctrinated into accepting it without questioning its intrinsic value.
Yeah, and it also lends itself to the dumbing down of America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's, you know, and I don't care for it musically or compositionally. I mean, what happened to melody? What happened to great singing? You know, so that's, you know, that's where I'm coming from. I miss when I'm sure you feel this way too. You know, when Johnny Carson had the great Doc Services big band, they hardly featured the band much. You know, commercials, the people always heard the band, but those times they would feature the band was some of my favorite times on that whole show.
Yeah, it was very seldom. Well, they weren't selling the art so much.
Right.
It was all to be entertainment. You're supposed to laugh. You're supposed to accept everything you see without questioning it. And music, even on that show, eventually became very plasticized.
But Johnny, you know, at least initially, he was very good about bringing it. He brought a lot of jazz on the show. He had a lot of, you know, a lot of good artists. And you mentioned entertainment. You know, I think that the listeners, the viewers of that show would have been just as entertained to see that band play once. You know, if they did one song every show, I think Americans would still have loved it, because they would. I certainly appreciate what's going on. And Doc was, you know, he's still with us. I think he lives in Mexico now. He's in his early 80s, but he was always flamboyant and, you know, funny, but yet a great musician. And I miss him, and I miss that band. I always, you know, really thought that they were something, and I'm glad that Johnny kept them and had him, you know, as long as he did.
Well, they always let the studio band, perform live, even if it was only 8 bars going out of a commercial or coming out of a commercial or going into the next commercial break. But that is also the format where they started using playback and pre-recorded music for the guests.
Oh,
not the studio band, but a lot of these groups that came on there. You know, you put a spotlight on somebody and you dim the lights in the background and somebody's singing and there's a whole orchestra playing, but those musicians weren't on the stage.
Oh.
You know, they violated union rules right on TV.
Because
that's led us to where we are today. You see, that same practice.
You mean with pre-recorded tracks?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And things got a lot more expensive and this and that and this and that. So, you know, in a way, live music has its back against the wall. It's slow for a lot of groups, but there's nothing like, you know, hearing a live band that's mixed well and plays well, and it's, you know, it's exciting. And I'll always, you know, push live music as long as I live. To me, that's the way to go.
Now, you didn't mention to the listening audience what instrument you were playing in your band.
Well, some people would say I'm not a musician. There's the clue. and I've lived with it all my musical life. I've turned it into a strength, actually, that, you know, that the drummer is not a musician. Drummers hang out with musicians. So, yes, I'm the drummer, and it's a lot of fun to kick a band like the one I play in, and to play you know, a diverse style of music, which includes funk, soul, blues, reggae, swing, rock, you know, more the classical rock thing. And that leadership I take from a band leader, I could see easily taking into politics. Well, I don't want to really be in politics. I want to be in media involved in things. But I could see where a band leader, I mean, as a band leader, when I think of what I would fix with the country, not as a dictator, just as someone, as a manager, how I would do things, because I've become quite good at delegating. You know, I am sure that I could fix a lot of things just in rapid succession, and not take anybody's liberties away, not tax anybody any further, not regulate anybody any further. So, you know, that's what I would do to make some changes and get to some solutions.
Would you put your ideas on C-SPAN, like what was promised during this last election?
You mean this election's pledge, and then in 94 was the contract with America?
Mm-hmm.
I heard, I was at a conference once, and the speaker said, I'm for the original contract with America, the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and the Constitution. You know, so those documents would still serve us well. Of course, the Constitution has those two big cracks that they've exploited, which is the Welfare Clause and the Commerce Clause. I've written my own new constitution, which closely resembles national one, the federal one, and but it goes much further in restricting government power. You know, it cuts back by about 95%, and it gives it back, you know, to the states. And I'm just so tired of this nonsense from the status quo, especially the status quo, the media that's more on the left. Or Democrats, when they talk about states' rights, they keep bringing up slavery and all this kind of stuff, like, and racism. Like, that has nothing to do with it. I mean, you know, black folks are going to want to pay less taxes just as much as anybody else, or be less regulated, or have this stupid drug war hanging over our heads. And speaking of drug wars, how could California fail to, you know, vote for the Prop 19 about the marijuana legislation? That I was really surprised that didn't pass.
Do you think that outcome that was reported was the real outcome, or might there have been vote fraud?
No, because this is America. We don't have vote fraud in our country. Sorry. you know, there could have been, but I think some of the opposition, you know, tried to scare people away. Of course, you got, you know, the prison lobby and, you know, a lot of the cops. Although the enlightened cops know better, though. That it's just such a waste of time and money. Just, you know, they keep this stuff illegal and make it worth its weight in gold. They get all these, so many people incarcerated for it who are not violent criminals. You know, it's just ridiculous. And then they still prohibit marijuana's first cousin, the hemp plant, which would play a major role in environmental, you know, raising environmental standards through the market, what it would do for, you know, clothing, housing, fabric, so many products, you know. So there's not really a free market, because in a true free market, there's no barriers to market entry. If you invent a better product, you should be allowed to sell it. You should be allowed to come in the market and sell it. Only worrying about pleasing your customers, not worrying about the government controlling you, or the fact that your competitors don't want you in the game.
Well, at this stage of the game, I would think that even the quality of the product wouldn't matter all that much. I mean, you have an unfair market right now, and the quality of most products is very low in comparison to the prices that are paid for them.
Yeah, and of course, we're starting to see the gradual price rises. Gee, I wonder where that's coming from. It ain't coming from businessmen and labor unions, because they ain't printing that money. They're not creating that credit expansion. So, that's what's happening. I mean, I can remember when we were kids, what made in Japan was, it was kind of junky or cheap, but, 10 years later or so, 15 years later, the quality really went up. That's an interesting thing about China. They're starting at, I know they have problems with certain things, and, of course that's going to happen. These are growing pains, as they go through a more of a market system, but China is starting at a higher level than Japan in the sense that they're starting with, a lot of their factories have newer technologies, newer things that Japan didn't even have at the time. So China has that going for it. And yet it has a Marxist government, which, is just something that I hope will change. But China's a big player, and Bush put this war on the credit card. These great Republican leaders, we're going to cut your taxes. Well, thank you for that. But at the same time, they spend, 10,000% more. So, yes, China's helping to pay for this war. And all the pro-war people out there, if you want more war, if you want to expand these wars, that means that we are going to owe more to China and Japan and these other creditors. Is that what you want for your children and your grandchildren? Is that what you see? I'm for a strong defense, but, we're just running it into the ground. And
it's not unless a defense when you invade another country.
Exactly. Yeah. And, some of our bravest veterans are the ones who've seen this and they've turned it around, and are, veterans against the Iraq war. I heard, you probably know this, that, Pat Tillman, that former football player from Arizona, apparently he saw what was going on, and he was ready to go public with it, as it was an illegal, unconstitutional war. He didn't like what was going on. And then he was killed by the enemy, which turned out not to be so much the enemy as friendly fire.
Well, they said friendly fire at close range, 3 bullet holes in the forehead.
Yeah, so, go figure on that. So, all these guys who thought they were going over there to, defend their country and everything, they've just, poor fellows, have been so misled. And, they're not, as far as I see, yes, I appreciate their service and I'm thankful for their bravery, but they're out there defending a globalist empire. If they were defending our freedoms, they should be home here defending our freedoms. And they should be aware that our federal government, likes to stir up trouble in other countries so they can get the military budget passed, so they can expand the military-industrial complex, at the expense of more consumer goods and things that we need for our everyday lives. Yes, we need weapons to protect us and to defend other people, but, I wouldn't want U.S. sticking missiles in Poland or other countries, to supposedly defend us from Iran or these other countries.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Well, Fred, we've come upon that time where we have to say goodnight to your listening audience. Just wanted to let you know and say whatever you want to say here. We've got about a minute and a half.
Well, Don, thank you again for your help and advice and your input. Good to be on the same page on so many things. My thanks again to BBS Radio and to all our listeners. Appreciate you tuning in, and we'll see you next time. Same place.
And what's the name of the show?
PK signing off from Third Stream View. Take care, everyone.
Good night, Fred.
See you next time. Thanks, Don. Where my people are living.
yeah.